Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
He's always louder than I expect. It always takes me by surprise. It's been years. First, a shout out to Brian Williams for what I understand was a lovely mention on Meet the Press this morning of The Big Uneasy, a film about why New Orleans flooded, playing nationwide tomorrow. More about that coming up. But first, ladies and gentlemen, the live music business in the United States seems to be cratering. I don't know if you've been following this story, but concert tours have been canceled. Dates have been canceled. Promoters have been giving the tickets away in the last minute, which, of course, really pleases the people who bought the tickets early at full price. They're going to do that again. But the live music business is alive and well in at least one part of American society, and you're paying for it. The military. Walter Pincus writes in the Washington Post that Defense Secretary Gates noted that there are about 6,000 foreign service officers in the State Department, and he quotes Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State, as saying, "We have more people in military bands than we have in the Foreign Service." So, is it true? The Army Band, known as Pershing's Own, based in the Washington area, according to the field manual, is authorized to have 250 officers and enlisted men. Then there's the Army's Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps, West Point's Military Academy Band, and the Army Field Band, located at Fort Meade, Maryland. Those are known as the Army's Special Bands. There are also three large Army bands: the Army Training and Doctrine Command Band at Fort Monroe, Virginia, the Army Ground Forces Band at Fort McPherson, Georgia, and the U.S. Army Europe Band and Chorus, stationed at Heidelberg, Germany. That's what keeps the Germans safe. That's what keeps them productive. In addition, there are 28 other regular Army bands in the United States and abroad, 18 Army Reserve bands, 53 Army National Guard bands. The hills are alive, ladies and gentlemen. Beyond that, almost every regular Army band has music performance teams, or MPTs, that can be employed separately from the band headquarters in support of specific musical missions, according to the field manual. The Army Band, for example, has a ceremonial trumpet group, the Herald Trumpets, the Army Chorus, the Army Blues, a large popular music group, a smaller pop group, Downrange, sorry, had a sinus thing there, and a string element, the Army Strings. Other bands also have smaller groups. The purpose of the Army bands and others run by all the military services is described in the field manual as, quote, to provide music throughout the entire spectrum of operations, to instill in our forces the will to fight and win, foster the support of our citizens, and promote America's interests at home and abroad. And it's not just the Army. The Washington-based Navy Band, with 105 members and a 24-person support staff, has 8 chamber music ensembles, plus the Commodores, a 19-person jazz ensemble. Nothing beats the sound of Navy jazz. Come on. What are you talking about? The Sea Chanters, a chorus of 23, the 7-person country bluegrass group Country Current, and a pop entertainment ensemble, The Cruisers. Bet they get a lot of ribbing. With 2 vocalists and 6 instrumentalists. In addition, there are 2 Navy bands in Japan and Italy, 1 in Hawaii, 8 across the U.S. mainland. There's the Navy Band New Orleans. Who knew? Actually, I did know. They march in the Mardi Gras parades, which not only has a ceremonial marching unit, but also the Express, top 40 variety, Navy Show Band South, show dance, and the Crescent City Brass Quintet Brass Band. There's some redundancy and repetition, I think, there. And they say some words more than once. The Air Force Band has 180 musicians, along with its own staff of music arrangers, composers, and copyists. I'm a composer for the Air Force Band. Was that available to you in high school counseling? They create many of the works performed by the band. It, too, has a number of ensembles, including the Singing Sergeants and its newest group, Max Impact. 4 of the Air Force's most dynamic vocalists and supported by a hard-hitting 5-piece rhythm section. The Air Force Academy Band has a marching band of 60, a concert band of 45, the Falconeers, an 18-member jazz ensemble. What do you think's better, Air Force jazz or Navy jazz? Now I'm perplexed. I'm perplexed, designers. The 8-member Blue Steel pop rock country group, Pop Rock Country. Spectrum. The 5-man Wild Blue country group and 5 other subgroups. There are 11 other active duty Air Force bands, 11 Air Force National Guard bands, 9 active duty Air Force bands tour in their own geographic areas, while 1 in Europe and another, the USAF Band of the Pacific, stationed in Alaska with elements in Japan and Hawaii. The Marine Corps Band has about 160 members. Its ensembles include a Marine Chamber Orchestra, the Marine Jazz Orchestra, military jazz, and a country music group, Free Country. Pay and benefits. A foreign service officer starts at the $45,000 to $50,000 range. In the special bands, you start at $51,000 for single people, $58,000 for married people, and all, of course, military benefits. And your mission is to play your instrument. By the way, the benefits include medical and dental care, group life insurance coverage, 30 days annual paid vacation, and educational benefits. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to beat these terrorists one military jazz band at a time. But, you know, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you got a pretty fine country pop rock ensemble. Now, if that doesn't make you feel safer, maybe this will. Continued technical troubles have forced the U.S. Missile Defense Agency to again postpone a test of the airborne laser system's ability to destroy enemy missiles. Another test date has yet to be set. So don't be rushing them. The test was delayed because of, quote, unsuccessful tracking beam calibration engagements by the airborne laser test bed against an airborne diagnostic aircraft, surrogate target. The calibrations must be successfully completed prior to firing the aircraft's main directed energy beams. So any of you enemies, wait for us to calibrate, okay? Then we'll get you. Boy, will we. The target missile was not fired. This is the 5th delay to the planned test. A February 11th test of the technology successfully destroyed the target. So be scared of that. We'll calibrate, and I swear we'll get back to you about this missile defense, because it's damn good. It just needs to be calibrated. Let's all calibrate, won't you? Hello, welcome to the show.
Down here were bound to change, and I said, and never count your chickens, for the cracks begin to show. So we live in plague and party, calm and fright, knowing those little pills will remain on the bedside table at night. For all this talking, talking about the water, will it ever rise up again? Talking, talking about the water, will it ever rise up again? Again in our lives. Each day, winds will come and winds will go, but they don't scare us like the mediocrity we have built down below us. And times were we'd stay and raise a hurricane, but we know nothing's different, nothing's changed in paradise lost again. It's all just talking. Talking about the water, will it ever rise up again? Talking about the water, will it ever rise up again? In our
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
Oh, you got me, Katie, with that piece on the evening news Friday night where you just had the Corps of Engineers bragging about how good the new work is and no sign that there was any critic or problem possible. You got me, baby. You got me good. From WWNO-FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, I tried to do a shout-out to them the other day, so I'm doing it now from here. This is Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've been with me for a while, like at least the last 5 years, you may remember the broadcast 5 years, well, 5 years ago next week, actually, after the thing had become apparent. It was a broadcast where it basically sitting in Los Angeles, I was struck by the possibility that I might never, if I ever got back to New Orleans, it would not be New Orleans anymore. Fortunately, it is. I am back more and more and more and more, and it is New Orleans. It's different. One of the startling things I've found in asking questions of people who should know is that today, 5 years along, we don't know where the evacuees who were put on buses and planes and trains and helicopters, and taken to, they didn't know where. We don't know where they are. We don't know how many of them are happy where they are, have built new lives, and Barbara Bush's words, you know, never had it so good, and how many of them want to come home. You know, we know everything about everything. We've got statistics on every baseball game played since 1888. We don't know this. Nutty. It's nutty. Nutty, the information age, isn't it? Anyway, everybody's. I brought up that show. I'm not going to do what everybody else is doing and rummage in the old stuff. There's plenty of new stuff. Plenty, with a capital T. You know, when somebody in show business says, "This is not about me," lock the doors because everybody should leave. So this is about me, but it's about. It's about me only in the sense that I made this film. Again, if you've been with this broadcast for a while, you know that you've been able to hear over the passage of the last few years experts, people who led investigations into why New Orleans flooded. Dr. Bob Bee from the University of California, Berkeley, Dr. Ivar van Heerden from the LSU Hurricane Center at the time. And as well as other experts like John Barry and a whistleblower from within the United States Army Corps of Engineers who raises serious questions about how the new improved system is going. Although those questions don't exist on a CBS Evening News. And last October, when President Obama was here in New Orleans for his town hall meeting, came and went. He did manage to say that the flooding was a natural disaster. Now, I'm sure in his visit here today, anyway, that spurred me to make a film with all these people and many others to sort of explicate the findings, to trace these investigators and their investigations, and to present the what is apparently the incontrovertible evidence, hasn't been controverted, that it was, in the words of Dr. Ray Seed of UC Berkeley, the greatest man-made engineering catastrophe since Chernobyl. Now, when you're in, you know, playing with Chernobyl, you're in the big leagues. That's not AAA. That's major. Anyway, that's all preface. Film comes out Monday nationwide. Not a call to action. You can stay home. And so, in the fullness of time, it became apparent to me that neither of the two NPR news magazines. And by the way, I'm what I say now may be the last time you hear this broadcast on this station, because this is going to touch some nerves. But okay, here we go. Neither of the two NPR news magazines, All Things Considered or Morning Edition, I think they're called, has chosen to do anything about this subject, and that's their choice. And one of these days, they'll explain it to you. So, being a stubborn kind of fella, I thought, okay, I can be Archer Daniels Midland. I can be the Joan and John Flinken Foundation. I can buy enhanced underwriting announcements at the end of the half hour to tell people about the impending forthcoming screening of this motion picture. So I'll slap the money down on the table, and the wording of the announcement included these words: documentary about why New Orleans flooded, which, as I just kind of explained to you, is in fact what the movie is about. After and you may be reading this about this in today's New York Post. That's why I'm going into this in a little depth. It's a little unusual for a quasi-celebrity to be doing a response to a gossip column item and basically endorsing and expanding on it, as opposed to, hey, they got this all wrong. That wasn't me. Those weren't my photographs. Those weren't my kids. Those are my kids, I mean. So the only thing I would quibble with the New York Post is that they say, I claim in the movie that the Army Corps of Engineers. I don't claim anything. What do I know? But to go back. So I decided to try to purchase enhanced underwriting time messages. And after a week of wrangling, NPR Legal issued the edict that this language would not be accepted in the announcement. Documentary about why New Orleans flooded. The only acceptable language they had decided was documentary about New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina. Even though the very first shot in the movie features a quote from Dr. Ray Seed of UC Berkeley saying, with the right kind of hurricane protection, New Orleans would have experienced something very different during Katrina. We call it, quote, wet ankles, unquote. So, kind of not a movie about Hurricane Katrina. In today's New York Post, NPR furnishes the explanation for this odd behavior. They say it's to comply with FCC guidelines. You know, those guidelines that say you can't really say what the product or service is about? You know those ones that keep Garrison Keillor from calling the folks at Land's End his friends? Those guidelines? All right, then. So please give, ladies and gentlemen, to whatever you like. And now, there's this.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, in the days preceding Maher Arar's U.S. deportation to a Syrian torture cell. You've heard about that. Washington's second highest-ranking State Department official believed the Royal Canadian Mounted Police wanted him, he was a Canadian, sent to Syria. That says a U.S. government report. The former Deputy Secretary of State told us that his initial impression was that Mr. Arar was a Canadian and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police was relinquishing custody of him to the Syrians, says the report by the Office of Inspector General of the Homeland Security Department. The previously secret report also details how the State Department did not follow usual procedure in such cases by obtaining diplomatic assurances from Syria that Arar would not be tortured. Little things, they slip under the thing, and then you have to go get the thing. The naturalized Canadian citizen was changing planes in New York a year after 9/11 when U.S. officials detained him, sent him to his native Syria, where he has testified he was tortured. He's been paid $10.5 million by the Canadian government, but those are Canadian dollars. After a commission of inquiry said his name appeared on a U.S. terror watch list based on false information supplied by Canadian officials. But in that inquiry, the justice found no evidence that the Mounties participated or acquiesced in the American decision to move Arar to Syria. The newly surfaced U.S. report contradicts that. Nice people doing nice things. Dateline Baghdad, because of poor record-keeping and lax oversight. You've never heard those excuses or explanations before, have you? The Department of Defense cannot account for how it spent $2.6 billion that belonged to the Iraqi government, according to the Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. The U.S. Defense... Oh, yes. The U.S. Defense Department is unable to account for almost $9 billion taken from Iraqi oil revenues for use in reconstruction from that same special inspector general. And FBI Director Robert Mueller told Congress that he does not know how many of his agents cheated on an important test about the limitations of the Bureau's powers to conduct surveillance and open cases without evidence of a crime. The Justice Department Inspector General is investigating whether hundreds of FBI agents cheated on the test. That would make J. Edgar Hoover roll over in his suite. News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Coming to shave y'all dry. Drove down to Cooncane Hall. Said we gonna stick a while. Gonna slip it to the alligator, down to the crocodile. From the hair of your funk in my machine. Gonna smoke a little reefer. We gonna drink a little gin. Cause we some high motherfuckers. Ready to shave y'all dry. They fought this game for two solid weeks. Neither one of them could help me beat. Monkey said I'm gonna slip it down to the grizzly bear. Got a card full of $7 over here. I'm a counting motherfucker. Ready to shave you dry. If I don't get no more,
I'm gonna push your eyes out with this badass 2x4, cause I'm a playing mother for you long, ready to shave y'all dry. That's the way it went down yesterday. Monkey and a baboon just couldn't get it in. They played a little game. There was some playing mother for you. Ready to shave you dry.
See, the problem was they needed a bonobo. Look it up. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show from New Orleans. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Independent newspaper in London, some nice stuff going on. And how long have we been in Afghanistan now? Anybody got a watch? Calendar? Sundial? Afghanistan's presidential office has condemned reports in the American media that Afghan government officials have received payments from the CIA in return for information. A U.S. newspaper report that a key national security advisor to President Hamid Karzai was being paid by the CIA is an insult to Afghanistan aimed at discrediting Karzai's government, the office said on Saturday. Citing Afghan and U.S. officials, the New York Times reported that Mohammad Zia Salehi, not one of the party crashers at the White House, Salehi, not Salahi, who is under investigation for allegedly soliciting bribes, has been in the pay of the American spy agency for years. The Washington Post made further claims that the CIA was paying a significant number of people in the Karzai administration. We're getting a money's worth. What's the problem? Afghanistan's government considers such an assertion an insult, a statement from President Karzai's office said. We strongly condemn such irresponsible publicity, which creates suspicion and doubt and discredits officials of our country. You hear a denial in there? Me neither. Salehi was arrested by Afghan police in a dawn raid in July as part of investigations into corruption, a major source of tension between Karzai and the U.S., but was released after President Karzai intervened, because he's president. The statement from Karzai's office added that the claims were part of an effort to deflect attention from tasks such as banning foreign security firms, a populist measure that the president announced earlier this month. The private security companies have been given 4 months to pack up a decree that drew criticism from Washington. Afghanistan faces parliamentary elections next month. Ooh, we brought democracy. And such firms have long been an irritant for many Afghans. Afghanistan believes that making such allegations will not strengthen the alliance against terrorism and will not strengthen an Afghanistan based on the law and rules, but will have negative effects in these areas, the president's statement added. This is part, they claimed, they concluded, of the routine politics of foreign news-mongering outlets and their spy agencies who try to influence other natures, unquote, the office of President Karzai. President Karzai has blamed much of the corruption, this story didn't point it out, but I think we've had it on here earlier, on those foreign contracting firms. So there. But no denial. Interesting. Must have forgotten it. Must have, you know, hit the delete button on the word processor at an odd moment. Now, from The Guardian, and I share the story with you, ladies and gentlemen, in this context. You may remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a cover story in Time magazine that featured a photograph of a mutilated Afghan girl. Her ears and nose had been cut off by the Taliban. And the words on the cover were, what happens when we leave Afghanistan? I don't know if it was a when or an if, but that was the basic thing. Without a question mark, by the way. So just for context, in that context, here's this. Doctors have removed 13 nails and 5 needles from a Sri Lankan maid who said her employers in Saudi Arabia had hammered them into her. What happens when we leave Saudi? What happens when we're in Saudi Arabia? L.G. Ariyawathi returned home from Saudi Arabia last week and was hospitalized in severe pain, said the family she worked for had punished her by heating the nails and needles and sticking them into her. X-rays showed she had 24 nails and needles in her body, said the doctor. The nails ranged in length from 2.5 to 5 centimeter, that's 1 to 2 inches, and the needles were about 2.5 centimeters, that's 1 inch. They were removed from Ariyawathi's legs and forehead. The surgery is successful and she's recovering now, the doctor said after a 3-hour procedure. He said 6 more needles in her hands could not be removed because the operation might damage her nerves and arteries, but they would not be harmful to her. Would affect using a cell phone, however. Ariyawathi, 49, has described the abuse meted out by her employers. They did not allow me even to rest. The woman at the house had heated the nails and then the man inserted them into my body. She said she went to Saudi Arabia in March and was paid only 2 months' salary, with her employer withholding the rest to buy an air ticket to send her home. About 1.5 million Sri Lankans work abroad, many as maids or drivers, to earn more than they can in their own country. Nearly 500,000 work in Saudi Arabia. Sri Lanka's Foreign Employment Bureau said Ariyawathi had been too afraid to complain to Saudi authorities, fearing that her employers might not let her return home. The Deputy Minister of Economic Development said the government would report the matter to the Saudi government. What? Oh, the Deputy Sri Lankan government would report the matter to the Saudi government and provide her with compensation for the needles hammered into her. Saudi officials did not respond to requests for comment. Their mouths apparently were nailed shut. What happens? You know what happens. And also from The Guardian, more from Hamid Karzai. Making friends wherever he goes, and he's staying home. He now has criticized American plans to start withdrawing troops from the country next summer, saying that naming the date has given the Taliban insurgency a morale boost. Do you hear the drums beating? This follows the claims earlier in the month by the head of the U.S. Marine Corps that plans to begin drawing down forces next July were invigorating insurgents. Do you see seeds being sown, ladies and gentlemen? General James Conway had said foreign forces should only withdraw when Afghan forces are ready and able to take over. That should be in about, how many centuries you got? A view also expressed earlier this month by the commander of U.S. and NATO forces, General David Petraeus. Now, following a meeting with U.S. congressmen in Kabul, Karzai says civilian casualties caused by Allied military operations are hampering the campaign against the Taliban. I don't think he likes us. Karzai also criticized a lack of concentration on destroying the terrorist refuge in Pakistan. Good timing, babe. In a BBC interview, the Afghan government's national security advisor said fighting the war on Afghan soil was not enough. Even if we defeat the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups within Afghanistan, if we don't destroy the recruitment center, we don't destroy the causes. It is not possible to win the war. Meanwhile, other reports, I think in the New York Times this week, that the U.S. is sending more, upping its military ante in Yemen, because Al-Qaeda in Yemen is flourishing now. It's a good thing we're bogged down in some way, that where we can't even, where the people are saying, what? Oh, I'm sorry. The Afghan government's national security advisor has repeatedly accused Pakistan of nurturing terrorism by providing sanctuary and support to the Taliban and other militant networks. He says Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, still regards Afghanistan as within its sphere of influence. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And now we come to this date being significant not just for folks in New Orleans. It is significant for folks in Iraq. This is the date by which American combat operations in Iraq will have been declared to have come to an end. We have pulled all our combat troops out of Iraq. Those were the troops that were training the Iraqi police and military and killing insurgents. And the only troops left now are training the Afghan police and military and killing insurgents. So it's a good moment maybe to evaluate that little enterprise with some numbers. Triggered by State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley having said earlier, a couple weeks ago, that the United States will never, you know, abandon Iraq because we have, quote, a $1 trillion investment there. This is in slight contrast to what former Assistant Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz was saying shortly after we invaded Iraq.
There are significant resources available for Iraqi reconstruction that come from the billions of dollars of frozen accounts, the $12 billion or so that's in the UN escrow account in Paris, and of course the potential of significant revenues from Iraq's own resources. So that money's all going to get applied to the effort of reconstruction, but that should help a lot.
It should help a lot, but that was before he fell in love with Shah Riza. U.S. 2009 monthly spending in Iraq, $7.3 billion. 2008 monthly spending in Iraq, $12 billion. Spending per second, $5,000 in 2008. Cost of deploying one U.S. soldier for 1 year in Iraq, $390,000. Lost and unaccounted for in Iraq, $9 billion worth of U.S. taxpayers' money, $549 million in spare parts shipped to U.S. contractors. Also, 190,000 guns, including 110,000 AK-47s. Missing, $1 billion in tractor trailers, tank recovery vehicles, machine guns, rocket-propelled grenades, and other equipment and services provided to Iraqi forces. Wasted in Iraq, $10 billion, according to congressional hearings. Halliburton overcharges classified by the Pentagon as unreasonable and unsupported, $1.4 billion. Non-U.S. troop casualties, not really, 316. U.S. troops wounded, 31,000. U.S. troops with serious mental health problems, 30% of the troops over there. Private contractors in Iraq, more than 180,000 at the height of the war. Journalists killed there, 141. By U.S. forces, 14. Iraqi civilians killed, estimated, between 50,000 to 100,000, but they may be much higher. Some informed estimates place Iraqi civilian casualties at over 600,000. Iraqi insurgents killed, 55,000. Iraqis displaced inside Iraq, 2,255,000. Iraqi refugees in Syria and Jordan, 2.1 million. Iraqi unemployment rate, 27 to 60%. Consumer price inflation in 2006, that was a bad year, 50%. Iraqi children suffering from chronic malnutrition, 28% as of June 2007, maybe better now. Percent of professionals who have left Iraq since 2003, 40%. Iraqi physicians who have left, 12,000. Murdered, 2,000. Average daily hours Iraqi homes have electricity, 1 to 2 hours. That's according to the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. Average daily hours Iraqi homes have electricity, 10 in 2007. Baghdad in 2007, 5 hours. Pre-war daily hours Baghdad homes had electricity, 16. Number of Iraqi homes connected to sewer systems, 37%. Iraqis without access to adequate water supplies, 70%. Water treatment plants rehabilitated, 22%. Percent of Iraqis who believe the coalition forces are responsible for any improvement in security, less than 1%. Iraqis who feel less secure because of the occupation, 67%. But ladies and gentlemen, we have a $1 trillion commitment there. We're not going away.
Say, hang until they drive. Love Zone's international, no longer green. An ethnic cleansing got the place real clean. 'Cause it's a trillion, a trillion dollar, trillion dollar bargain.
Dollar bargain.
Yes, it is.
Dollar bargain.
5 hours of power in Baghdad each day. Nice place to visit, very nice place to stay. Traded centralized murder for freelance crime. Spreading democracy, one vote at a time. Stop paying the Sunnis, cue the about face. No more war with Iran, 'cause they help run the place. Keep the UN relevant, 'cause that was our pledge. Kuwait is happy, Kurds are still on edge. It's a trillion dollar, trillion dollar bargain.
Dollar bargain.
Oh, yes, it is.
Trillion dollar bargain.
Didn't fight them here.
Oh, no.
'Cause we fought them there. Said up until that usage was ceased. Oh, Abu Ghraib.
Oh, no.
Some apples were bad,
oh, so bad.
And oil would pay for it all. That was off just its head. 'Cause it's a trillion.
Alto-falantes do universo, vou louvar-vos aqui na minha lua. Um trabalho que fiz no outro planeta, onde nave flutua e disco voa. Fiz meu marco no solo marciano, num deserto vermelho sem garoa. Este marco que eu fiz é fortaleza, elevando ao quadrado Gibraltar. Torreão levadiça, raio laser e um sistema internet de radar. Não tem sonda nem nave tripulada que consiga descer nem decolar. Construí o meu marco na certeza que ninguém cibernético humano poderia romper as minhas guardas, nem achar qualquer falha no meu plano. Ficam todos em fogos ou em deimos, contemplando o meu marco marciano.
Uau, 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 uau.
Meu marco tem rosto de pessoa, tem ruínas de ruas e cidades, tem muralhas, pirâmides e restos de culturas, demônios, divindades. A história de Marte soterrada pelo efêmero pó das tempestades. Construí o meu marco gigantesco num planalto cercado por montanhas, precipícios gelados e falésias, projetando no ar formas estranhas, como os muros ciclópicos de Tebas e as fatais cordilheiras da Espanha. Bem na praça central, um monumento em beleza, meu marco marciano, um granito em enigma, recortado pelos rudes martelos de Vulcano, um esfinge em perfil contra o poente, guardiã imortal do meu arcano.
Now, of course, we would have broadcast it in English, but we couldn't because of FCC guidelines. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
They are pesky guidelines. Not content with picking up fines for excessive end zone celebrations, Chad Okocino has been slapped on the wrist by the NFL for a new violation: tweeting from the sidelines. The flamboyant Cincinnati Bengals wide out. That's what they say. I don't know football. Received a $25,000 fine for possessing an electronic device and for posting messages on Twitter during his team's preseason game against the Philadelphia Eagles. According to NFL rules, players are prohibited from posting messages to social media websites starting 90 minutes before kickoff and can only resume after all post-game media obligations have been met. I think that's also an FCC guideline as well. But Okocinko sent two messages during the game. The latter tweet relayed his displeasure with a big hit he took during the game. He addressed the fine from the league via Twitter. "I've been fined from the league a substantial amount for money for tweeting. First time Twitter hasn't made me money, but cost me money," he said. "Dear NFL," he continued, "I apologize for tweeting during the game, but that was 2 months of my Bugatti payments you just took from me." He had my sympathy right up to Dateline Casper, Wyoming. Former U.S. Senator Alan Simpson has apologized for a recent email comment in which he compared Social Security to, quote, "a milk cow with 300 million tits," unquote. Some critics want him removed from President Obama's bipartisan deficit commission because of the comment. White House spokesman said Simpson will stay. "Alan Simpson has apologized, and while we regret and do not condone his comments, we accept his apology," said White House spokesperson. Simpson did the cow comment in an email to Ashley Carson, executive director of the Older Women's League. Nice choice. He was responding to an article in which she accused Simpson of ageism and sexism. Apology said, "Over the last 40 years, I have had my size 15 feet in my mouth a time or two. To quote my old friend and colleague Lloyd Benson, when I make a mistake, it's a doozy." When's the last time you heard somebody use the word doozy? A Silver Spring, Maryland Princeton school principal who's been accused of sexual harassment by some of his staff sent a letter to the school community apologizing for the language he used in school, but it was not enough. A group of high school students and parents picketed the school. In a letter to parents last week, the principal, Floyd Starnes, apologized for the terms of endearment he had used after teachers complained he'd called them baby or sweetie. I'm assuming they're women. Archbishop Edwin O'Brien apologized this week This is in Baltimore, for the pain caused by the recent round of Catholic school closings, as he visited a new elementary school intended to provide seats for displaced students. "I'm sorry for the disappointment and pain I know will remain for a while," he said. "To grow and heal, there has to be some pain." Dateline London passengers on a British Airways flight from London to Hong Kong were mistakenly told to prepare for a crash landing, causing panic on board. The carrier said Friday it had apologized for causing customers distress after an emergency message was accidentally triggered. And the word trigger was accidentally used. Another Catholic apology. A Catholic school in Australia has apologized to parents after teachers awarded a costume prize to a child dressed as Adolf Hitler. The class of 9 and 10-year-olds have been asked to dress up as famous people at the school in Western Australia. Teachers declared the winner to be a boy who dressed as the Nazi leader. The principal said in hindsight the school would have done it differently. Dateline South Bend, Indiana. The former clerk treasurer of a northern Indiana town apologized during a court hearing for embezzling about $30,000 in town money. The apology from 30-year-old Casey Grove came just before a St. Joseph County judge sentenced him to 3 years in prison. Management of a New Jersey country club has apologized to its members for allowing the Real Housewives of New Jersey onto their grounds, claiming it had no idea what the show was about. Club general manager John Stanley promised members the Housewives will never be welcome back. "Being somewhat naive and not aware of the true nature of the TV show, we granted permission." Idaho expects to sort out its bungled Medicaid billing and get a backlog of claims processed within 60 days, state officials announced as the CEO of the company handling the changeover apologized to the state. Crawford County, Arkansas, Chief Deputy Ron Brown says he's apologized to a woman who complained that a court bailiff berated her for breastfeeding her child in a courtroom. The San Jose condo owner is breathing easy after PG&E, the local utility, threatened to shut off her power. PG&E has acknowledged several mistakes. It underbilled the woman, then it overbilled her before threatening to cut off her power. And they now say they're sorry. And Philippine President Benigno Noynoy Aquino III has apologized to those offended when he was caught on television apparently smiling while being interviewed at the crime scene hours after a bloody hostage-taking. He said his smile was maybe just an expression of exasperation rather than anything. Trying to make you smile, whatever it means. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this weekend's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, maybe, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a... Do we know this? People have said it's not anymore. As a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like abiding totally by FCC guidelines. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Information on the Big Uneasy. And the documentation behind the movie, maybe, maybe someday, available at thebiguneasy.com. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. Le Show is on Twitter at LeTwits. Support for this program comes from inadequately anchored floodwalls by the Army Corps of Engineers. And for folks in New Orleans, I will be at the screening of The Big Uneasy Monday night at the Britannia Theater and Tuesday night, special Tuesday night, at Chalmette Movies. Yes, there are movies in Chalmette. Hope to meet all the Chalmatians. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.